Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, my very special guest is San Diego's new sheriff, Kelly Martinez. She has been in law enforcement since 1985 with the Sheriff's Department, working her way up the ranks from deputy sheriff to undersheriff before winning election as sheriff last November. Kelly, congratulations on breaking that glass ceiling and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miriam. Really nice to be here.
Okay. So can you start by telling us what you consider the top priorities as being top sheriff in town?
Yeah, absolutely. Staffing, you know, is one of our largest priorities right now. If we don't have staff, we can't perform all of the functions that we need to. So we're doing okay with hiring law enforcement deputy sheriffs right now, but we're short-staffed in the jails. We need detentions deputies, nurses, mental health clinicians, comm center, dispatchers, all those types of jobs. So, you know, hopefully anyone listening that would like a job, they're welcome to come over to the Sheriff's Department. That'd be great.
Very good. I know there was attrition during COVID, so it's nice to hear that there's openings out there, folks, if people are interested.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, improving our jails. We have a lot of work to do there. So we're gonna do a lot of work improving our jails. We've done a lot in the last year, but we have a lot of work ahead of us.
Let's dive into that. As most listeners probably know, or viewers out there, a key issue has been the high number of deaths of people in custody in recent years, you know, long before you came on board. And that prompted a state auditor's report and some legislative oversight. And I know you've implemented a lot of reforms, Kelly, just in the couple of months that you've had the job already. Can you start by telling us some of the things that you've done, the main things that you've done?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, a critical component of people who come into our custody is really their health care. And so we've done a lot to improve understanding the status of people's health when they come into our custody. We're doing a better job of medical and mental health screening at intake. We do a voluntary urine screening at intake for individuals who just really see what drugs they might have on board so that we can help manage their withdrawal of either drugs or alcohol when they come in.
Yeah, I know you've had made the Narcan available everywhere so that people can, even inmates can help each other if there's an overdose, and it saves some lives already.
Yeah, we've had, our deputies and nurses and all of our staff have been carrying Narcan since last year. Late last year, we also introduced it into the housing units and in our intake area for people who are in custody to use. And I think we're up to about 15 people who've been saved by other individuals in custody at this point. So
that's fantastic.
Really excited that project. We're only one of, I think, three jails in the state that are doing that.
Okay. So in addition to that, I didn't mean to cut you off there. You were going through the list of some of the things you've done to improve jail safety and help keep people safe.
Yeah, right. So intake is the first step. And so understand better where people are at when they come into our custody. We're also doing a lot with our telemedicine, and we brought in a contracted provider last June that's bringing in all of our doctor staff and some psychiatrists and about 23 different contracts they manage for us with healthcare. We're having better connectivity through wireless technology of medical records of the people who are in our custody. Excuse me, and that's really helped a lot. We introduced body-worn cameras into our jail system last year, so we have a better understanding of what happens and when it's happening. Just a lot of training and policies. We have a lot of infrastructure improvements to make. The George Bailey facility is about a $50 million renovation, and we should be starting that later this year. We're almost done with the Rock Mountain facility, which is going to be one of our newer facilities. That's a renovation project from an old facility, and we'll be able to occupy that hopefully in the next few months. And awesome. We're looking at the Vista Jail.
Super. Now, I know there's still been a couple of deaths this year, 19 last year before you came on board, I think two or three this year. There was also a troubling report that just came out this morning from the medical examiner's office about a death that occurred a year ago, March of 2022, of a homeless and very mentally ill man who apparently had, you know, threatened to kill anybody who would try to medicate him. They ruled this a homicide because he was found, among other things, to have pneumonia, malnutrition, dehydration due to untreated mental illness, you know, blunt force trauma, and COVID-19 on top of all of that. What would be different if someone came into the jail today or in the future who was that severely mentally ill and combative? What ideas do you have to prevent something like that from happening again?
Well, after that incident happened last March, we really became proactive in how we handle people in our custody who really need conservatorship, right? They need someone else to make medical decisions for them. So we've streamlined our process to get conservatorship granted through the courts for those folks so that we can sort of force medication and those types of things. And then we also identified about 10% of our population that are gravely disabled. They're unable to care for themselves, even in our setting, the jail setting. And so we check on those folks a couple times a week with a multidisciplinary team of psychiatrists, doctors, and then also our security staff. So they understand, they make sure that individuals are eating, that they have appropriate hygiene and all of those things. And it's really gone a long way. I think we're doing a better job.
Good. I heard you on NPR this morning, coincidentally, as I was driving into the office. You mentioned something about considering possibly an entirely separate facility for the psychiatric, I guess, patients or those in custody who really are too mentally ill to care for themselves. Tell us how that might work.
Yeah, so last year we started a collaboration with HHSA and Behavioral Health, the healthcare work group. Mm-hmm. And the focus of that group is to look at best practices for treating people with their health issues, not only when they're in custody, but pre-custody and post-custody, mm-hmm. so that we can have that continuity of care so people don't continue to deteriorate over time when they're in and out of the jail system. So one thought I had when I envisioned, healthcare for our facilities is a hospital just for people who are in our custody so that, you know, people aren't being treated in a jail setting, they're being treated in a hospital setting. So yeah. That's one of the things we're looking at our consultant to advise us if that's going to be the best practice. And I'm looking forward to those recommendations.
Yeah, seems like a compassionate approach. The public always wants to know about crime and what's being done about that. Can you give us an update on whatever the latest crime trends are? What's gone up, what's gone down, any areas of concern right now?
Yeah, so what's really been concerning, obviously, is fentanyl. That's really having an impact on our communities. You know, everybody's seen that, the overdose rate. We started a law enforcement leave behind program in December where deputies have naloxone and Narcan available. They leave it behind in homes where they think it might help. It's concerning that the rate of children who are being exposed to fentanyl and teenagers and young adults who are using fentanyl and finding those overdose cases over and over. So fentanyl's probably are my biggest concern right now, but we still have concerns about victimization through human trafficking, some of the things that are going on with juveniles.
That was next to my list to ask. Trafficking is huge. It was horrifying to hear from NBC that they're finding this going on. And they said every single school they looked at in the county, this was going on, this grooming of children, really, minors for sex trafficking. So tell me, I know it's a huge problem, but what else is your office working to do that maybe hasn't been done in the past to help address this and keep these kids safe?
Yeah, well, when I was a lieutenant, I was actually on the ground floor of bringing our human trafficking task force mm-hmm. to San Diego County, along with DA Stefan. We were both part of that initial group that were mm-hmm. getting that off the ground floor. We've continued to participate in the task force that's run by DOJ, and it's just such a predatory crime. You know, as you said, people are being, it's awful. They're being convinced to get involved in this life, and a lot of times through they're being victimized, they're abused, they're beaten, they're raped, and then they're trafficked. And as you said, a lot of times it's young teenagers, both boys and girls. So
yeah, very frightening, being groomed to send somebody a nude photo. Next thing you know, they're being blackmailed that it's going to be everywhere if they won't do things they don't want to do. Nationwide, there have been concerns by many over deaths at the hands of law enforcement that have made names like George Floyd a household name, and most recently, the beating of death of a young Black man by Memphis police. And thankfully, San Diego has not been in the spotlight for anything that horrific. But Kelly, what do you think needs to be done to address the culture within police departments that has contributed to some of those tragedies? And have you implemented any changes in training procedures right here in San Diego in the Sheriff's Department to sort of, you know, hopefully proactively prevent something like that from happening here?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at both George Floyd and Tyre Nichols, the common theme there is culture. There was a culture in those departments where activity like that was, you know, occurring. And the one startling thing for me with Tyre Nichols in Memphis was that those officers were on camera and they continued still.
And they were all black. So it was, you can't say it was a racial thing in that case because it was black officers beating a black kid who was only accused of, if anything, reckless driving on his way home. So
yeah, that was clearly a homicide. That wasn't a police action at all. And I think it's important to know that most officers and most deputies in this country are doing the right thing for the right reasons.
Absolutely.
In San Diego County, you know, when we've been very proactive in de-escalation training and techniques and talking and monitoring body worn camera and just really being engaged with our supervisors to understand when things are going the wrong direction.
Yeah, maybe that's why maybe it's not a coincidence that those things haven't happened here, at least certainly nothing on the scale of those national incidents. Speaking of accountability, you have taken some steps recently to hold deputies accountable for wrongdoing, with actually several deputies recently arrested for various things. Can you talk about how you're working to make sure that everybody is held accountable for their actions, even if they're a law enforcement officer?
Yeah, we're not above the law in this job, and trust and accountability go hand in hand. And I expect, you know, people that work for me to have integrity and to do the right things for the right reasons, to not certainly not commit criminal acts. And if they do, then they're going to be held accountable. And I'll be very transparent and open about those arrests and what's going on. And talking to the people in my department, everyone's holding their heads a little higher right now, I think, because they understand we are a department of integrity.
Well, I would think that would be good for morale, at least for those many, the majority of the good officers out there. Kelly, in rural areas, sometimes the law enforcement concerns are different than in the big urban places, but we do hear complaints sometimes from residents over long response times if they call for help in places like Campbell, but also more recently from some who say they have trouble even getting a police report filed. I'll give you an example. Ronald Town died. There was a CHP report taken after he was found injured on Highway 78 out in Ramona back on January 9th. Blunt force injuries. His mother, his employer, and a friend have all told me they tried to get the sheriff up in Ramona to investigate, and they can't even seem to get a police report taken. And yet there were what I would think are suspicious circumstances. Mr. Town was an older fellow. He worked as a handyman. He was found seriously injured late at night, 3 miles from his home, without the service dog he usually takes everywhere, without his vehicles. Who the family and friends say the landlord has his vehicles, claims this guy gave them to him. The man lived long enough to tell people he'd been robbed, which by itself would be a crime. Family says all his belongings were missing and his safe was opened and emptied out, you know, and now the landlord had showed up the day before at his employer, telling the employer, you got to pay me the money that you owe this guy. And now the landlord, we're told, is being kicked out by the property owner because he owes the property owner money. And yet with all of that, as far as we can determine, there has not been an investigation. So the question is, what is the procedure here? I mean, when members of the community or even a mother thinks a crime has been committed, what, you know, should a report be taken? How does one get an investigation going to bring some closure so people know whether there was foul play or not in a case like that?
Well, did I hear you say that the Highway Patrol took an accident report?
They took an accident report. It's strange because they say that they don't think he was hit by a car. The medical examiner says it was blunt force injuries that he died of, although they're still awaiting toxicology reports. But they don't, you know, they said it would really be up to the sheriff to investigate whether there was any crime. And so far, at least three people are telling us they can't even get a report filed. I did talk to Homicide. Homicide said they had nothing on file about this, the Homicide Unit. I don't know.
Well, the primary agency of jurisdiction is the Highway Patrol if they took the initial report. So it would really be up to them to ask. And they can conduct a homicide investigation if they believe there's enough information there. They have that authority. So they would really be the agency that the family should press for more answers.
Interesting. Can they go higher up the chain if one officer there hasn't really taken it seriously?
Yeah, absolutely. They can go. There's a commander over this district if they need to go that high, but they're the primary.
Okay. What about robbery? Would they investigate that too? If his belongings?
They can investigate any state crime that occurs on state property. If there's a robbery, in this case, if the victim is deceased, that would be the victim of the robbery. So that victim is no longer present to file that report, but the family can ask for an investigation if they are then, if they become the owners of his property, probably.
Okay, thank you. Homelessness is another huge challenge in our region. Can you tell us what your approach is for dealing with, compassionately, with homeless folks that are in need while also addressing community concerns if a homeless person is doing something that's not legal?
Yeah, of course. I started the homeless assistance resource team back in 2018. Mm-hmm. They've done a great job of providing resources to the homeless.
So you were saying you started a homeless, I didn't quite catch that, task force, was it?
Yeah, it's called the Homeless Assistance Resource Team, and I started that in 2018, and they've done a terrific job providing resources to individuals who are homeless or need resources. So they continue to work in all of our unincorporated areas. They don't work in cities. So they cleaned up the Magnolia area, if you remember that last year.
Oh, yeah, we do. Now that I guess the county jumped in too and opened a safe parking place area there for homeless folks that have vehicles, at least. So.
Right. So that was that team. And then we also have a lot of, if someone's committing a crime, it doesn't matter if they're homeless or not. We know that there's homelessness and crime intersect, both with people being victimized as homeless individuals or committing crime. So
yes,
deputies will respond. And to those, we don't have the ability to house people long term right now who are misdemeanors just because of the state of our jail. So we're working on that right now. We're working on a project where hopefully we can provide some safe jail space for individuals who are committing misdemeanor crimes and then provide them the resources while they're in our custody. So hopefully they don't remain homeless when they get out.
Yeah, very good. You ran on a platform of improving transparency and information to the public. Can you tell us what you've done so far toward that end?
Yeah, we've done a lot as far as our Citizen Law Enforcement Review Board. We have an MOA that I signed with the director last year. He now responds to in-custody death scenes when they occur, as well as officer-involved, deputy-involved shooting scenes. Mm-hmm. I think as you've seen and you've already stated, we had some deputies arrested. We were very transparent and open about that.
Yes.
So and we've got a lot of information if anyone's interested on our website. There's all of the materials related to some of the recent legislation, 1421 and others, some of the information that's on our website, but there's just a ton of information there. And I'm trying to make myself a lot more available to the media so that,
Oh, wonderful. Well, yeah, one of my questions was media related. As you know, there's a new law that prevents private data from being transmitted on scanners. And so what that's meant is that a lot of police departments, including the sheriff's department, has taken their scanner channel completely off. It's no longer available for the press to listen to, let alone the public. And that affects, in our case, La Mesa and El Cajon PD, because they used the same scanner channels. And so we can no longer hear any of that. But what's happened, Kelly, is that not only are we not able to get the emergency news now about, to protect public safety and tell them there's a chase underway for a wanted felon or a bomb threat somewhere or whatever, we're also getting a lot less press releases from all of these agencies on matters of major crimes in East County. It's like the agencies realize that we can't hear what's going on, and so they don't bother to send as many releases out as they used to. I'm not talking just about sheriff, but all of the police agencies that we deal with that no longer have scanners. So the question really is, what can be done to do a better job of A, getting notice out when there really is an imminent threat to public safety, to the media, not the Nixles, I know are great if you live right there, but for everybody else, for the media or people who might be driving into that area, we'd like to warn them. The other thing is just to get information maybe a couple times a week on when major crimes have occurred, so that we can do our job as reporters of letting the public know and writing more detailed news stories about these, you know, major incidents. And there's, it's not that there's none, but there's very few. I went back and tracked it, and I would say it's dropped probably 95% from, you know, what were you getting a year and a half, 2 years ago from these agencies.
Wow. You know, I wasn't aware of that, and I can't really speak for why other agencies may or may not be posting as many releases. I do know that we have press boards at all of our stations that anyone can walk in and look at the crimes that occurred during the week. Each of the stations should have a press board.
Yeah, but I mean, there's many stations all over East County. I could hardly go walk into every single station. Isn't there a way to?
Yeah, there's other things we're doing. So we do a lot through social media. That's how we do instant alerts to the public that there's a major incident or road closure or something that they need to, you know, weather hazards and things like that. Mm-hmm. For those notifications, wildland fires, all of those types of.
I will say your Twitter feed is very good on some of that, those sorts of things.
You know. Oh, good. The other thing that, you know, I know from my standpoint, trying to better inform the public in our communities, we weren't releasing information in Spanish. So now we do. Our media releases are both in English and in Spanish.
That's great.
So that's great.
No, it's most of the frustration as media is when, you know, the public will be calling me, emailing me, Miriam, what's going on? There's a million sirens out here. Or we heard there was a stabbing last night. How come it's not on any of the news stations? You know, and then we're having to try to make a bunch of calls to figure it out. Whereas in the past, we would have gotten a press release from whatever department, usually if there was something as large as a, you know, murder or an attempted homicide or a carjacking or, you know, those kinds of things. I know it's not possible to notify about every purse snatching, but at least the biggest incidents, it would just be
I think we should. I can't imagine us not reporting out a murder or something.
I don't know. Not very much. I mean, we seem to get a lot of press releases about, you know, coffee with the community and, you know, job openings and things like that and road closures and stuff. But like lately, there's been a few in North County, but very, very little out here. There's some. It's not that there's none, but I know just from the calls we get from the public that there's a lot more happening out there that we're not
here. If we could do better at that, yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. What else, just in general, are you doing as San Diego's new top cop to help improve things in the sheriff's department that I haven't asked you about, Kelly, and keep people safe across our region?
Yeah, thanks. Well, for a lot of our communities, they might notice some new leadership at the stations in the next months. We've had a lot of promotions. We're going to have about 8 captain promotions, which means we had some commander promotions, which means some of our stations, Poway, San Marcos, North Coastal stations, will all have new captains in the next coming months, probably April or so. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a little new flavor, new personalities. I think some of our substations might have some new lieutenants. So look to that, look to new leadership, and hopefully the press out there will highlight those leaders so that you can all get to know them better. We're really working hard, continuing to work hard on information-led policing. We really focus our resources based on data and evidence-based policing. So, you know, be sure and report when something happens in your community, because that's how we know where to focus our resources. So,
right.
And then prevention is really key to a lot of this. Lock your doors, lock your cars, let your neighbors know when something's happening. If your mail's stolen or something's going on there, let everyone know so that people can be on the lookout and be each other's best advocate for safety.
Yeah. Do you have any of those coffee in the communities coming up in East County that we should shout out for? They're great. I've attended a couple of them, and they seem to work with the public letting you know what the issues are and the sheriff's letting the public know, you know, what they should be aware of as well.
Yeah. And with the new station leadership, you'll have some opportunities to meet that leadership at those coffees. So look for the social media on those and the advertisements. I know that we've got a gun buyback event in North County coming up. I don't know if we'll have one in East County this year, but we probably will. So if you want to take that opportunity, that'd be great. Too.
Super. On the NICSL alerts, can people sign up for more than just their own zip code if you want to be aware of several, you know, what's going on in several other places, you know, grandma's house or whatever, or for a news reporter? Can we sign up for multiple zip codes to maybe be more timely informed on things? I know the NICSL alerts are fabulous. I had a personal experience with that a few years ago. I'm driving home. I see a police car stopped on the road above me. I was about to hop out and say, gee, what's going on? Is it a gas leak or something? Why are they blocking the road? And then my phone beeped and I looked down on it. It says, mass shooter on street above you, take shelter on the south side of your house. And oh my God, you know, but I was impressed not only that I got the alert, but that it was so specific. So, you know, shout out for that. But I thought it would be great to be able to sign up for, you know, several zip codes on those.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with Nixle to know that answer, but that sounds great. Good.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you have the final word, Sheriff. Listeners and viewers, if you've tuned in late, we do both video on the website and broadcast on the radio, but we are speaking with Kelly Martinez, the brand new sheriff and first woman sheriff for San Diego County. Kelly, I'll let you have the last word. What else would you like our viewers and listeners to know today?
You know, really, I'd just like everyone in our communities to know that I work for you. I'm a sheriff elected by the people, and I really work for the people. So my goal and my commitment is to keep our communities safe and to do the best job I can for all of you.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.